You're listening to LGRadio.online. I'm Leo Green, and this is In Conversation. In this edition, we'll be hearing from one of the world's greatest artists and songwriters, not just of his own time, but of any time. So many of Van Morrison's songs nestle on the shelves of our most loved standards, sitting as equals next to the musical works of Cole Porter, Johnny Mercer, the Gershwins, Holland Dozier Holland, and all the other writers that make up that select group of people who have created bodies of work, the love and enjoyment for which will outlive both themselves and all of us. So Van, as we're going to hear during the course of these shows, your introduction to music came not just from your dad's incredible record collection, but like so many of your generation, from who you saw and heard on the TV growing up in 50s Belfast.
Yeah, well, that's where it started for me. Early on, I mean, Elton Hayes was a big name. Now you mentioned Elton Hayes, it was who? But when I was a kid, Elton Hayes was, he was a big, you know, star. He was on TV quite a bit. He was in that Robin Hood movie. He played Alan Adale in the Robin Hood movie. He had a song in that. His catchphrase was, sings to a small guitar, because he literally did have a small guitar. He's an excellent guitar player. He played classical as well.
Sweet music and a small guitar bring.
And also there was a Tonight Show with Mitch and Moore. And we had Rory and Alec McEwen.
There was a wee Cooper Wall lived in Fife. Nickety-nackety-noon.
We had Steve Benbow.
I'm a rambler, I'm a gambler, I'm a long ways from home. And if you don't like me, well, leave me alone.
Robin Hall and Jimmy McGregor.
Kill your whole boys, let her go, boys.
So that was like the main first influence was that. It was on every night. Cliff Mitchell more. Sometimes Roy was doing lead belly songs, so that tied in with the stuff that my father had because I was learning lead belly songs. It was all kind of part of the same thing for me, you know? Roy and Alex, they threw in a couple of blues now and then. Sometimes they threw a few blues into the program. So you had the kind of Robin Hall, Jimmy McGregor thing. Then you had Steve Benbow, who was doing Irish and English folk songs. And, you know, you had Cy Grant, who he's doing calypso type of stuff.
Do let me alone, nobody do let me alone.
So you had the whole kind of range of like folk, you know, English, Irish, Scottish, American folk music all in one program kind of thing. And I remember Rory used to make lyrics up sometimes to the topical, the news of the day. So whatever news that was happening that day. Sometimes Rory would do a calypso, incorporating the news that he made up, like, on the spot. Like, he'd make up, you know, right before the program. And sometimes he'd still be writing it when he was about to play it, have the lyrics there, and he'd be, so that was my first experience of songwriting right there. So I was following this, like, route of wanting to be a folk musician. Basically, it was just, like, one guy and a guitar. And sometimes it was a duo, you know? It was that, and then there was the influence of Lead Belly, Sonny Terry, Brian McGee, Josh White.
Walk on, walk on, walk on.
Then also there was influence of Jimmy Rogers, the country singer, like just one guy on a guitar, you know? Or sometimes two guys and one guitar, like Robin Hall, Jimmy McGregor, two guys and one guitar. But it was mainly one guy on a guitar, whether that was Jimmy Rogers, I mean, most of his recordings, apart from what he made one with Louis Armstrong, apart from the one with Louis Armstrong and Little Harden, most of it was just him and a guitar.
Frankie and Johnny were sweethearts. Oh Lord, how they did love.
You know, that's kind of what it was. So you didn't need, these guys didn't have a band. So, but then when I heard the other stuff, when I was getting into the Muddy Water stuff, then it was like, You can't do this without a band, you know, you need a band. So then that became the focus. That was like turned on, you know.
Now when I was a young boy, at the age of 5, my mother said I was gonna be the greatest man alive.
So through the TV and your dad's record collection, you were exposed to Irish, Scottish and English folk music, as well as all that jazz and blues, like that classic we're just hearing now from the Great Muddy Waters. That's clearly a sound that immediately lodged itself in your head for the rest of your life. Also, just regards early influences, I can remember you once told me about a guy in your street who had a huge collection of country and blues recordings.
Oh yeah, he did all. He was into country music. He did like, he was like, they used to have jams. This is another thing that, you know, people don't know about, is like, they used to have jam sessions on a Sunday afternoon outside, you know, at the back entry. It was him and a few other guys, and they'd do like kind of, you know, a lot of Hank Williams stuff, Jimmy Rogers. They'd do some obscure, you know, Appalachian folk songs. It was all kinds of stuff. And that was pre-skiffle, you know. So you had the people I was seeing on TV, the stuff that was happening around me, you know, in my area, in my street, basically in my back door, you know. So that was all going on all at the same time. Meanwhile, my father was buying the records. He had the Lead Belly records and Josh White and Sonny Terry, Brian McGee. And then Muddy Waters came along. We bought some Muddy Waters records and Harlem Wolf. So then that got me into the Chicago blues. I was still kind of in the wanting to be a folk singer mode. Did an audition for the BBC. Nothing happened. Then shortly after that, bingo, it was like Lonnie Donegan came along. They had that single with the Chris Barber band. It was the Chris Barber band, sort of featuring Lonnie Donegan. I think that's how it was labeled. I remember the label. Anyway, that came out. So that was basically then still folk music. You know, they were calling it skiffle, but skiffle was actually, guess what, actually folk music. And Donegan called it folk music with a jazz beat. That's what he called it. Down the Rock Island Line, she's a mighty good road. The Rock Island Line is a road to ride, yeah. So anyway, that was the next phase. Was, you know, instead of just like, you know, one guy on guitar or two guys in guitar and vocals, it became a group. And it was like skiffle group, so you could actually do, you know, folk music in a group format. Also, Donegan was doing Lead Belly, which tied in with Rory McKeown and Lead Belly and the whole thing. I mean, it was kind of like perfect. So that was my first band was a skiffle group, basically. And it was from just guys that lived in my street. We all went to the same school. But like I said, my first gig was at school concert Christmas about a year before I left.
Right. And how old are you by this point?
Oh, well, probably 14 at the time. I think it was about a year before I left.
So you're still very much a kid at this point. How long did the skiffle phase last for?
The skiffle phase kind of like faded out after a couple of years. Well, as far as doing it, as far as gigs kind of went, it was all kind of you know, rock and roll groups. So apart from a few skiffle gigs, the first like kind of, you know, paying gigs were like rock and roll band. It was originally called Danny Sands and the Javelins. He was a female singer, but when I joined, she was actually leaving, so they actually wanted like a front person. She was like getting phased out because she didn't want to do it anymore. And so then they got me as like the front man, and then it became the Thunderbirds after that was called, I think. So we went into place called The Hut in Chamberlain Street in Belfast. It was like every week we played there.
And what kind of stuff would you have been doing?
Well, rock and roll. Some of the guys liked Shadow stuff, so the guitar player, you know, played that. And Ventures, and he played the Ventures stuff. One of the other guys, he sort of was into Buddy Holly, so he did a bit of that. I was doing rock and roll stuff, so I was doing stuff like Bonnie Maroney, Little Richard stuff, Tutti Frutti, Ready Teddy. So I remember doing Freddie Cannon, Tallahassee Lassie, that was one I did. The Johnny Kid, Shaking All Over, Please Don't Touch. I think we did a few instrumentals. I didn't really want to be a front man, so I got a saxophone. So I got a tenor sax. So basically, I'd seen a movie. A movie came out when I was during this period. It was called Jazz on a Summer's Day. I saw this movie and I saw this Jimmy Giuffre trio, and they were doing like Trin in the River, and he was playing this tenor sax. I swear I want to do that. So I got a tenor sax because I didn't really want to be a front guy, so I wanted to hide behind that. I wanted to play it also, but it was a dual kind of move. It was like one move was like, yeah, you know, I want to get into this instrument, but the other move was like, I don't want to be a front man. So I was like basically hiding behind the tenor. So then there was like, you know, it was mixed up a lot. There was more instrumentals then. And there was, you know, I think at one point I wasn't really doing any vocals. You know, at one point I was just, you know, letting the other guys take over. And then the band was expanded to be more like a show band. For some reason, they didn't want to book groups because show bands were becoming the end. That was like the end thing. We got an actual guy in who was the front man. So we got a front man, and that was George Hetherington. He was from Glasgow. There's a lot of people traveling then from Glasgow to Belfast. It was kind of like a, you know, shuttle, you know? So there was him and the drummer were from Glasgow, and he was like the main singer at that point. Then gradually, I was probably doing about a third of the songs. That band ended up then going to Thompson's Restaurant in Belfast every weekend. We had a residency. Then we started to change the format because we were into Ray Charles, you know, and we were like, this is it. This is the direction we want. We were Ray Charles freaks. We've just totally lived and breathed Ray Charles, and, you know, we used to buy the 45, every 45 that came out.
Let me tell you about a girl I know. She is my baby and she lives next door. Every morning before the sun comes up, she brings my coffee in my favorite cup. That's why I know.
So then we were taking the band more in that direction. It was a show band, but we were turning into an R&B band. So we went to Scotland, and last gig in Scotland we did was the Beach Ballroom in Aberdeen. As soon as we finished the gig, we got in the van and we drove that night just straight from the Beach Ballroom in Aberdeen down to London. Got in the morning, and we parked around Leicester Square. We were just like sleeping in the van around Leicester Square. And then we had a number, contact number for Don Charles, who we backed him up in Scotland on some of his gigs. He had a couple of hits at the time. He had Look Homeward Angel and Hermit of Misty Mountain. So we had his number in London, and we looked him up. You know, he sort of, you know, took care of us and bought us sandwiches because we were broke, and you know, got our suits cleaned and all that, and introduced us to Ruby Bard, who was an agent for Rick Gunnell's agency. And yeah, she managed Georgie Fame as well, and so she took us on for auditions for Germany. So this place in the middle of Leicester Square, not the theater, it was another place. They just had these all day auditions, and they were just like bands coming in, you know, like, next. It was just like an all-day thing that they were having, these auditions. So Ruby Bard ended up getting us a contract to go to Germany. So that was kind of the next move. So that was about 62, probably 62.
I mean, it's interesting. As a musician, you know, we've heard so much about that club scene in Germany for musicians of your generation. But can you just kind of share with us now what it was actually like to be part of and very much in that club scene? It wasn't non-stop fun and games, was it? I mean, the schedule you all had to go through, for example, was brutal, wasn't it?
Like seven sets a night, seven nights a week, matinees. So it ended up being 53 sets a week, no days off. And then, you know, of course, then, you know, we had to change instruments and, you know, change the whole thing around, because it was like, you had to, because you were playing, you know, from like, I think it started at 8 and finished at 3 in the morning.
Gosh, is that non-stop?
Yeah. Well, you got like a 5-minute break in between each set.
And who would you guys have been playing to? Was it expats, locals, or?
GIs and local people. Well, a lot of GIs used to come because that was their entertainment, and they wanted to hear certain songs. So that was also part of the training, was that the GIs would say, do you know this song? Some of them actually used to get up, and there was a guy who was quite good. I don't know what happened to him. His name was Lee Reed. He was a black GI, and he used to get up, and you know, he's the guy that taught me how to play guitar with my thumb.
Really?
Yeah, well, everybody's using plectrums. So he grabbed the guitar player's guitar, he grabbed the guitar, and so he started, he was doing this, he was playing with this, and I thought, well, that's great, you know, because I was doing that with the folk stuff. First of all, trying to get these two fingers, but I couldn't get those two fingers, but I only got one finger. So I was in the Carter family style, from the Alan Lomax book. But this guy that was getting like a different sound when he played with his thumb than when you play with a plaque, it was much more soulful sound. So that's where I picked that up. It was from this guy, and he used to do Shake a Hand. That was his favorite song, was Shake a Hand. That's what he wanted to do.
Shake a hand, shake a hand.
Then there's various other guys came up, and you know, they would want to do, there was two guys used to do mashed potatoes, so we got, yeah, do the mashed potatoes, and they had a dance routine and they did that. So there was a lot of kind of input coming from these like black GIs, and then we do, I remember, I don't know, it was Nighttime Is the Right Time, the Ray Charles one.
You know the nighttime now.
Holiday.
Is the right time.
Holiday.
To be.
Holiday.
With the one you love now.
Holiday.
Say now, oh baby.
Holiday.
Say now, come on baby.
Holiday.
I wanna be the one I love now.
Holiday.
You know what I'm thinking of.
Of course, they would bring in Bobby Bland stuff and say, hey man, do you know this Bobby Bland song? I said, no, I don't know that. And they go, like, well, this is how it goes. So I said, You Let the Temptation. I remember that was one that this guy taught me. He was banging the top of the piano. He just sang it to me. Things like that.
Yield not to temptation. Oh, my love, while I'm away. Don't you know you gotta be strong, leave all the other guys alone. One bright sunny day, I'll be back for home to stay.
Yield not
to temptation, and let no one lead you astray.
So many times,
you're gonna be lonely. So many times, you're gonna be blue. But yield not. Strong, leave all the other guys alone. One bright sunny day, well, I'll be back home to stay.
Yield not
to temptation.
That Bobby Bland track concludes part one of our In Conversation series here on LGRadio.online with Van Morrison. This is LGRadio.online. Thanks for listening.